Chapter 7. It was still 3 hours to dawn as the rescue party, headed by Amber and Skipper, left the Stickle dwelling. Goody pressed parcels of food upon them, clucking worriedly.
Now, I don't want to hear of anyone getting themselves captured by those mad cats. They'll eat you, for sure.
Amber the Squirrel Chief smiled as she hefted a pack of food.
Don't fret your spines, Goody. We're more likely to be laid low by the amount of rations you're making us take than by an enemy.
Skip appeared inside his pack.
Marm, my old stomach would sink in a stream if I ate half of this. I'd be down at the bows for a week.
A small band of tough, capable woodlanders were paw-picked from Amber's Squirrel Archers and Skipper's Otter Crew. They stood about checking weapons. The otters twirled slings and selected stones, some of them balancing light-throwing javelins. The squirrels waxed bowstrings and belted on full quivers. Ben Stickle remarked to his wife,
"As fine a body of woodlanders as I've seen. Let's hope they can be of help to our little gomph."
Ferdy and Cog strolled out to join the band. The two small hedgehogs wore cooking pot helmets and blanket cloaks. Each carried a piece of firewood, and they scowled in a warlike manner as they stood among the squirrels and otters. The skipper of otters clapped a paw to his brow and staggered about in mock fright.
"Strike me colours, if it ain't two bloodthirsty savages! One glance at these two had put a wildcat off his skilly and duff for life."
Ferdy and Cog strutted about, tripping on their blankets, but still managing to maintain fierce grimaces. Concealing a smile, Lady Amber took the two would-be warriors by their paws and positioned them outside the Stickle house. She placed one either side of the doorway, where they stood scowling and stabbing the air with their firewood weapons. The Otter and Squirrel band dutifully scowled back in recognition of two fellow fighters. Skipper gave them a broad wink and waved his muscular tail for silence.
"Belay the gab and listen to me now. These here rough-looking coves has offered to spill some blood and guts over at Kutir. But what I say is, leave the easy work to us. We'll manage that. What we need is two ruffians who'll stop at nothing to patrol round this cottage and guard it while we're gone. I'll tell you, otters and squirrels, 'tis hard and dangerous work. So I'll leave my packet of tuck to keep you two villains alive while you're on watch here. That's if you think you can manage the job."
Ferdy and Cog stood to attention, spikes bristling, cheeks puffed out with authority, practically bursting with enthusiasm. They saluted officiously as the rescue party moved off in the direction of Kutir. Amber sniffed the light breeze.
"Not more than 2 hours to daybreak now."
Skipper wound a slingshot about his paw.
"Aye, marm. That'll give us enough time if we move along handy."
On the fringe of Mossflower, Kutir stood, dark and forbidding, the very embodiment of evil and tyranny, awaiting the dawn. Martin sat bolt upright at the sound of a bird on the outside. He shook Gonf soundly.
"Wake up, sleepyhead. It'll be dawn in less than an hour."
The mouse thief sat up, rubbing his paws into half-opened eyes. He looked upward to the narrow strip of sky through the barred window slit.
"Time to go, matey."
Gonf took out his slim knife blade. Sliding it into the keyhole of the cell door, he twitched it back and forth.
"Oh, good. An easy one."
With both eyes closed and a smile of pleasure on his chubby face, he jiggled the blade until there was a metallic click.
"That's it, matey. Give it a shove."
Martin pushed the door, but it refused to open.
"It's still shut. What's gone wrong?"
Gonf tested it carefully, pushing until he heard a slight rattle.
"Bolts. I'll need a boost. Can you hold me up, matey?"
Martin braced his back against the door, cupped his paws and squared his shoulders.
"Try me."
The mouse thief climbed up and balanced on his friend's shoulders. Martin bore his weight patiently, hoping that Gonf's talents would do the trick.
"How does it look up there?"
he asked anxiously. Gonf's voice came back, punctuated by odd grunts of concentration.
"No real problems, matey. Leastways, nothing that a prince of thieves can't handle. Rusty old bolts. Shove a bit of greasy cheese on them with me knife blade, loop the wire round the bolt handle, then it's just a matter of wiggle and a jiggle and tug until it comes loose like this one. Ha! Got it."
Martin squared his shoulders once more as Gonf sought a new position.
"Now for the other lock. Hee hee! This beats scrabbling and climbing up doors. A good strong matey to stand on. Martin, you're as solid as a rock."
"Maybe,"
Martin grunted.
"But I'm not as thick as one, so stop prancing about on the back of my neck like that. I've been standing here for ages."
Gonf was never short of an answer.
"Ages? You've not been there 10 seconds, and the job's near done. I've known clumsy thieves and burglars who'd keep you there until you grew grey whiskers. Just thank your lucky stars you've got an honest thief like me to look after you, matey. Look out, here it goes.
Suddenly the door swung open, and they both tumbled in a heap out into the passage. Gonf was laughing uproariously. Martin clapped a paw across his noisy friend's mouth.
Shh! You'll have the guards coming down to check on the din.
Martin closed the door carefully and rebolted it. Gonf was halfway along the passage when he noticed Martin was not with him. Glancing back, he saw his friend standing by a cell far down the corridor. It was Gingivere's cell, and Martin was speaking to the wildcat.
Gingivere, do you remember me? I'm Martin the warrior. When I was taken prisoner, you were the only one who tried to help me. I've not forgotten that, even though we're on opposite sides. I've got to go now, but if there's a way that I can help you when I'm free, then I will.
Gingivere's voice reached Martin. He sounded weak and despairing.
Save yourself, Martin. Get far away from this place and my sister.
Gonf pulled Martin away, calling as he went.
I'm Gonf, Prince of Mouse Thieves. We've got to go now, but if you've helped my friend, then I'll try and help you some day.
As they hurried along the corridor, Gingivere's voice echoed behind.
Thank you. Good fortune go with both of you, friends.
They reached the end of the passage and mounted the stairs. Gonf was panting slightly, so Martin waited while he regained his breath. The stairs were built in a spiral. At the top was a wooden door. Gonf held up a paw for silence as he eased it open. It was all clear. They stepped out into a broad hallway which stretched away to the left and right of them. Martin scratched his head.
Which way? Left or right?
Gonf placed his slim blade on the floor and spun it. They stood watching until it stopped.
Left! Come on, matey!
Continuing down the hallway, they saw a high window with the morning sunlight streaming through onto the top of a flat, wide stairway. Gonf groaned.
Oh, no! We're late! We've mistimed it because of that dark cell. Ah, well, if we hurry, they may still be waiting outside for us. Which way now?
As the steps took a turn, they were in a smaller hall with a door at either end. The sound of Sarmina's voice could be heard. They froze.
If one word of this ever gets out, just one, you, Vixen, and you, Ashleg, I'll see you both hanged in chains over a roasting pit. The army will only follow the rightful leader. And now that my brother is in the cells, that's me. I am Queen of the Thousand Eyes. I rule Katir and Mossflower.
The escapers backed down onto the stairway they had just ascended, the echoes of Sarmina's voice all around them as they ran round the turn of the steps. Martin and Gonf crashed straight into Sarmina and Ashleg and Fortunata, who had unknowingly been walking up the stairs behind them. In the shrubs and small trees that bordered the woodland edge of Katir, the otters and squirrels lay low. It was full bright morning, long past the dawn. Birds were singing. The sun beamed over bright greenery dotted with daphne, spurge laurel and late winter jasmine. Unconscious to the beauty around him, Skipper lay whispering to Amber.
We can't hang the anchor round here much longer, ma'am.
Amber stared at Katir's gloomy walls.
You're right, Skip. We could be spotted in broad daylight from those walls quite easily. Where in the name of the fur has that little thief got to?
We can only give him a little longer.
Skipper shrugged resignedly.
Then we'll have to push off and try another day.
A young dark-coloured otter came wriggling through the grass on his stomach and saluted them.
Oh, you're never going to believe this, Skip, but there's a whole fleet of mice dressed in funny-looking robes coming this way through the woods. Never seen aught like it in all me born days.
Skipper and Amber looked quizzically at the scouts.
Where?
Sort of circling from the south. Look there.
Sure enough, he had spoken truly. Through the trees a band of mice were marching, all dressed in green-brown robes, complete with cowls and rope ties about the middle. Amber shook her head in amazement. She signalled a squirrel in a nearby tree.
Quickly, take this otter with you. Get over and tell that bunch of ninnies to get down flat. Don't they know where they are?
Before the pair dashed off, Skipper spoke.
Stay with them. Soon as it's safe, take them in tow. Go to Brockhall. That should be large enough. Get in touch with Bella and tell her about them. Say that me and Lady Amber will be in touch before nightfall. Off you go.
Amber watched them bound away, ducking and weaving. Beside the army of Katir, there was always Argilor to watch out for. She turned to Skipper.
What a prize bunch of boobies. Imagine parading round Katir in broad daylight. Where do you suppose they've come from?
The otter snorted.
Search me. Bella will probably know as she's done a fair bit of roaming in her time. Talking of time, I think it's nearly run out for young Gomf if he doesn't show himself soon.
Even at this early morning hour, the warmth from the sun had lulled old Argilor into a drowsy sleep. The eagle perched high in a spruce, partially leaning against the trunk. In his sleep he groaned pleasurably, ruffling his plumage slightly to let the glorious warmth seep through to his ancient flesh and cold bones. If only there was a place that had no cold winter or damp windy autumn, just eternal spring followed by summer. Life passed Argilor by as he slept the day through on his perch. It passed by, more importantly, in the forms of an otter and a squirrel, leading a band of robed mice directly beneath the very tree where he slumbered. It would have been hard to tell who was more surprised, the escaping prisoners or the wildcat and her minions. Immediately they collided. Sarmina gave a yowl of rage and, more by luck than judgment, seized Gomf's leg. This was followed by a more anguished yowl as Martin whipped the blade from Gomf's belt and stabbed Sarmina sharply in the paw, forcing her to release his friend.
Follow me!
Martin grabbed Gomf and ran back up the stairs, giving Fortunata a good slash across the rump with the blade as he went. The vixen collided with Ashleg, and they fell in a jumble. Sarmina tripped over him. She struggled to extricate herself, screaming curses and raking the unlucky pair with her claws.
Blockheads! Idiots! Out of my way!
Martin and Gomf dashed headlong down the hall. Taking the door to the right, they dived inside, slamming it shut behind them. It was the late Lord Greeneye's bedchamber. With the shouts of their pursuers ringing closer, the escapers scuffled for cover beneath the large canopied bed.
We can't stay here long,
Martin panted as he felt about in the darkness and found Gomf's paw.
Don't worry, matey. Get ready to make a bolt when I shout.
There was no further opportunity for conversation as the door banged open. Sarmina pushed her creatures before her and closed the door. She was licking her wounded paw. Fortunata, who had suffered a loss of dignity, tried not to rub at her wounded rump. Ashleg stumped about trying to sound helpful.
At least we know we've got them cornered in here somewhere.
Somewhere?
Echoed Fortunata.
But where?
Sarmina lowered her voice as she called the other two close.
We don't know how much those mice overheard. They must not leave this room alive. Let us search every corner thoroughly.
Stretched out flat beneath the bed, Martin could see the paws of their pursuers. He watched as they dispersed in separate directions, then turned towards Gomf. In the name of mice, that little thief was the absolute limit. Gomf had actually closed his eyes and appeared to be napping. Martin prodded him urgently. The three hunters were getting closer to the bed as other hiding places were discounted.
Ashleg, have you checked these wall hangings properly?
Yes, m'lady. Maybe they're on top of the bed canopy.
The pine marten was actually leaning against the side of the bed now. Gomf patted Martin reassuringly as he wriggled silently past him. The warrior mouse could only watch in dumb suspense as his daring little friend went to work. Gomf carefully pulled the end of Ashleg's long cloak beneath the bed, slitted it expertly with his blade, and crawled a short way toward the bedhead, where a tall, heavy folding screen stood to one side. Working quickly, he tied the slit ends of the unsuspecting Martin's cloak around one leg of the screen. Gomf did three things almost in one movement. He pricked Ashleg's good paw viciously with his blade, grabbed Martin and shot from beneath the bed, roaring as they went.
There they go! Stop them!
Pandemonium ensued. Ashleg screamed and lurched forward. The heavy screen went with him. It tottered and fell. Sarmina managed to leap out the way, but the vixen was not so lucky. She was struck by the screen. Half stunned, she pushed it away. The cumbersome screen toppled sideways into the fireplace, falling directly into the grate, which held the embers of a previous night's fire. In a trice, the room was a thick, choking mess of ashes, cinders, dust, and smouldering embers. Martin and Gomf pushed the door open. Two weasel guards, who had heard the noise in passing, came thundering into the room as Martin and Gomf hurried past them out into the hall. Behind them, the shouts reached a crescendo as unprotected paws came in contact with a floor strewn with red-hot embers. This time, Martin took the lead as they went straight down the hall and through the door at the opposite end. They found themselves in an upper mess room, full of soldiers, stoats, ferrets and weasels, all eating breakfast at a long trestle table with a window at one end. Taken completely by surprise, the soldiers sat gaping at the two fugitives.
Stop those mice! Kill them! them!
Sarmina's enraged shouts reached them as she ran toward the mess. Gonf sized up the situation at a glance. The unexpected was called for. Without a second thought, he pulled Martin with him. They ran across the room, bounded from a vacant seat up onto the tabletop, and dashed madly along it, scattering food, drink, and vessels everywhere as they went. Together, the thief and the warrior leapt through the open window into empty space with a loud, defiant shout.
Yeah!
Skipper and Amber both heard the cry. So did Argilor. It came from the north side of Kertir, not far from where the Woodlander Squirrel Scout stood perched in a tree. He bounded down and made his report to Amber.
It's Gonf, but there's another mouse with him. They jumped from the upper barracks window.
We'd better get round there. Are they hurt?
No, but talk about lucky. They landed right in the foliage of a big old yew growing on that side.
Amber leaped up.
Get Beach and the others. We'll have to get them out of there double quick. Skipper, you bring the crew and give us cover.
Argilor launched himself from his spruce, flapping ponderously. Once he was airborne, his natural grace and ability took over. Circling to gain height, he squinted over to where the sounds had come from. The yew's upper foliage was shaking. The eagle soared downward to see if it was anything edible. Inside the mess room, Sarmina laid about herself with the sturdy wooden ladle.
Don't stand bobbing, you dim-witted toads! Someone get out there and capture them!
There was an immediate stampede to grab weapons and buckle armour on. Nobody seemed disposed to leap out of the window, though they all tried to look as if they were helping in some way. Sarmina flailed the ladle about in a fury. Suddenly a bright young stoat, more reckless than his comrades, saw a chance to distinguish himself in the eyes of his mistress. He bounded up onto the table.
Leave it to me, my lady, I'll stop them!
Striking a gallant pose, the stoat ran to the window ledge and stood nerving himself for the leap. Argilor soared low, close to the yew. His rheumy eyes could not distinguish much between the crisscross branches. He was about to abandon hope of a quick meal and turning away on his huge wingspan, when suddenly a fat, juicy stoat with an expression of heroic duty upon its face jumped into midair, straight into the talons of the wheeling eagle. Argilor gave a screech of delight, which contrasted jarringly with the stoat's ragged squeal of dismay. The old eagle flapped joyfully off to his spruce branch with the tasty burden. Gonf wiped perspiration from his whiskers.
In the name of mice and crab apples, that big fella nearly had us there, matey.
Martin pointed to the open window.
It's not over yet. Look.
Sarmina stood glaring at them. The mess was crowded with frightened creatures, none of whom would venture near the window. Ashleg shuddered and clutched at his clammy fur.
Did you see those claws? Oh, the size of its beak!
Sarmina swung him round by his cloak.
Shut your blathering face and get me my bow and arrows. Just look at that for a prize piece of impudence.
Gonf was pulling faces at the wildcat queen. He blew out his cheeks, stuck a paw to his nose, and rolled his eyes in the most ridiculous manner. Sarmina snatched up a spear and flung it, but the weapon was deflected by the close-knit yew branches. A well-aimed arrow would do the trick, she thought.
Where's that dithering wooden leg with my bow and arrows?
8 sturdy red squirrels came bounding through the yew branches, as easily as walking a paved path. They split into 2 groups of 4, each taking charge of the 2 escapers. Lady Amber came swinging in. She spoke sternly to Gonf.
Now none of your shenanigans, young thief. You, whoever you are, just relax and leave the rest to us. You're in safe paws.
Before he could say a word, Martin was seized by paws and tail. He felt himself tossed about like a shuttlecock. Never in his life had he descended from a height so swiftly, or with such ease. It was like being a flower petal on a gentle breeze. In a trice, he and Gonf were on firm ground. A horde of armed soldiers poured out of Kertir. Martin sought about for a weapon, anything to defend himself with. There was a whirring sound, and the first 4 soldiers running forward seemed to relax, lying down upon the grass as if they were taking a nap. 2 more went down. Martin saw a line of otters swinging slings. They were hurling large river pebbles with deadly accuracy. A big burly otter came running to them. Gonf clasped his strong tattooed paws.
Skipper, I knew me old messmate wouldn't leave his favourite thief in the lurch. Oh, by the way, this is Martin the warrior. He's my friend, you know.
Skipper signalled his crew to retreat, waving to Lady Amber as he fitted another stone to his slingshot.
Ha! Welcome aboard, Martin. Though how an honest fellow like you came to be mixed up with this little buccaneer, I don't know.
Skipper introduced Martin to Lady Amber, who said rapidly, glancing anxiously about her.
Pleased to meet you, I'm sure, Martin. Skipper, I don't like this. They're planning something.
As Amber spoke, a horde of soldiers bearing thousand-eye shields came streaming out of the main door with Sarmina leading them. There were far too many to contend with. Amber muttered to Skipper,
"Take Martin and Gonf. Break and run for it. We'll cover you."
Sarmina was furious. She guessed what was happening. The squirrels were taking a stand while the otters slipped off into Mossflower with the fugitives. She issued orders to a ferret captain named Raker.
"Stop here with a platoon and face the squirrels. I'll take the rest and circle around them, and we'll cut them off. They won't realize I'm following, so they'll slow down a bit when they think they're in the clear."
Raker saluted.
"As you say, m'lady. Here you, Scratch, and you, Thicktail, take your squads and follow the Queen."
The two weasel captains saluted with their spears, then detailed their creatures to follow Sarmina. The wildcat had bounded off alone, taking a wide loop south and back east. Nothing aggravated Raker more than squirrel-resistant fighters. They were like smoke in a breeze, here and gone. He took aim and heaved his spear at their leader, but it was a complete waste of time. Amber stood back dryly, twirling her sling and ducking as she let the spear graze harmlessly past. Directing her troops back across the open ground, she loosed a heavy pebble at tremendous speed. Raker threw his shield up in the nick of time, staggering backward as the stone struck his shield and bounced off. When the ferret lowered his shield, it was as if there had never been a squirrel inside Katir's grounds. They were gone into Mossflower. High in the branches of the trees that fringed the woodland, squirrels shook with silent laughter at the dumbfounded expression on Raker's face. He shook a mailed paw at the trees.
"Come out and fight, you cowards!"
One last thunderous hail of stones, arrows and javelin sent the Katir soldiery scurrying for cover. The treetops rustled and swayed. Distant laughter told the enemy that the squirrels were swinging away through the sunlit upper terraces of leafy Mossflower.